El Nino is here, and that's what we've been talking about. And we've got Chris Brandolino, who's the principal scientist with NIWA National Climate Centre. And, well, as I mentioned, this word is something that we've been hearing a lot. And some say, some may not know exactly what it is and how it impacts us, but we're going to get Chris to have a bit of a kōrero with us about what it is. Tēnā koe, Chris, how are you doing?
Oh, kia ora, I'm well. Thanks for having me on. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Hey, talk to us about this thing called El Nino. Am I saying it right? I feel like I'm saying it like it's a happy thing. But
No. No, you're saying it correctly, actually. Some people, I've heard a lot of people say El Nino, which is actually incorrect. If you look at the spelling, there's a tilde over the N, and it's a Spanish word, and that means El Nino. Actually, do you know the term El Nino? It is a Spanish word, but it comes from the Spanish word little boy or Christ child. So how El Nino kind of was discovered, you know, to use a kind of a phrase, is that in Peru, the fishermen there, they would go fishing for anchovies. And they would notice around Christmas time, they did not have a good catch. The anchovy yield was very low. And that's because when there's an El Nino, the waters off South America near Peru would get really unusually warm. And anchovies like cooler ocean water. So they would notice that this would be at its worst around Christmas time. Hence the term El Nino, or the Christ child, the little boy. So they kind of associated Christmas with the worst of the conditions. And that's a nice segue to talk about what is actually El Nino. So you can imagine the trade winds blowing from South America all the way to Indonesia, right along the equator, and they blow easterly. So South America to Indonesia. Now, when there's an El Nino, those trade winds, which blow from the east to the west, they will slow down. And in some cases, they may actually reverse and go westerly. And when that happens, all this warm water that is typically over the western Pacific Ocean, say south of the Philippines, but say north of the Pacific Islands, around the equator, that can actually start moving east over many weeks and months towards South America. And that's how the warm water gets there. And that what that does is that has implications to our weather in Aotearoa, New Zealand, not just here, but globally. So what it means for us is that we tend to get stronger winds. We've already noticed that, I'm sure. So the wind is really strong. We've had these periods where there's even damaging wind, like across the South Island. So that is a kind of a hallmark or a reflection of El Nino. And that wind happens because weather systems are a bit closer together, high and low pressure, and that causes the air to kind of get squeezed. So we see the wind more. And the wind is generally from the west. So we generally get west or even southwest wind. So that's kind of a background of how El Nino started, but obviously there's more to it than just that.
Thanks for sharing that. Actually, right at the top when you were speaking about the etymology is, I don't even know if that's the right word either, but I've been reading this book called Every Word Has a Tale. I feel like this word should definitely be in that book because it has a really interesting story.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I was trying to do the math with you. And so in regards to how it impacts Aotearoa, when you were talking about those west and the winds and stuff like that, which sides and parts of the country is that going to impact the most?
Yeah, great question. Thanks for asking that. So I'll take a step back. So up until March of this year and 3 years prior to that, we have the complete opposite of El Nino. That's called La Nina, which is Spanish for the little girl. It's the opposite. And when we have a La Nina, our air favors the east and northeast. And so that comes from a humid, warm place, the tropics and the subtropics. And that brings in water vapor. That's fuel for heavy rain. So that's a big reason, not the only, but a big reason why we've had so much stinking rain over the past year. Now that wind direction's changing, back to your question, to the west and southwest. So because our wind is changing, so are the rainfall patterns. So last year, up until about, I don't know, autumn of this year, a lot of rain was in the Coromandel, Waikato, Northland, Auckland, Parafatti, Gisborne, Hawke's Bay, a lot of those places saw a lot of rain. And because the wind is going to be coming from a different direction, now we're going to see an excess or maybe even too much rain for places like Southland, over toward Westland Taipotini, over toward Fiordland National Park, over toward Interior Otago, Queenstown. So think of those areas that had some pretty bad flooding about a week or two ago, over toward Gore and Queenstown. Those same areas we'll just have to keep a sharp eye on for potentially more big rain events. And that, again, because of the air coming off the Tasman Sea, that westerly wind. However, on the other side of the mountains, such as Canterbury, Kaikoura, over toward eastern Otago, like Dunedin, that wind turns to be a drier wind. It comes down the Southern Alps. We call that a fern wind. Where I'm from in North America, we call it a Chinook wind. That's a Native American term. It means snow eater. Whenever air goes down a mountain, you're compressing it. And when you compress air, you make it move faster and it gets warmer. So the eastern part of the South Island, they're going to have likely a dry lean. And we're also going to have dryness probably for the upper North Island. So Gisborne, Tarapiti, Gisborne, Hawke's Bay, Coromandel, Waikato, Northland, and Auckland. So those places, we are worried about dryness. So even though we've had a lot of rain over the past, first half of the year or so, I think these next 3 months of 2023 are going to be in a much drier direction. Look, it doesn't mean it won't rain. Of course it'll rain, but we just think it'll rain less than what is usual for October through to December. And there's going to be a lot of variability. El Nino Springs, one of the hallmarks is to be these really wild kind of roller coaster temperature rides where, for 2 or 3 days, we can find temperatures that are almost like summer. And then a few days later, it'll feel closer to winter. And I think we're going to experience that this week. As we get closer to Thursday and Friday for the eastern part of both islands, we're going to see temperatures well into the 20s. And I wouldn't be surprised if a few spots, especially on Friday, if we got close to, say, 30 degrees. And then the following week, as we go back to school and work after the school holidays end, it's going to get pretty chilly again. So these wild temperature swings, maybe some late season frosts, that dryness I talked about, the wind. So those are things that I think people will really notice over the coming weeks and months. And I think as we get into summer, so November and especially December, and even later, January and February, you get these same weather patterns and you get these periods of hot temperatures because our air is coming off Australia and they're going to get really hot. We could find temperatures we could find some really hot temperatures, I guess what I'm saying, as you work away toward late spring and into summer, where we find some temperatures well into the 30s. And then we get a sharp cool down. So a lot of temperature changes for the next 3 months, a lot of wind, and for some places, a lot of dry. And for a few places, like the west of the South Island, as well as Southland, maybe even a lot of wet.
There's so many ways you can answer this, but let's just say I live in West Auckland, but work in South Auckland. Some people are like, it doesn't really affect us, and it'll likely affect a lot of farmers more than it might affect others and their lifestyles. But for us in Auckland, should we be worried?
Well, I think one of the things we've been saying, our messaging is that, look, if let's say you rely on tank water, not on town water, I think you should be starting to think about a plan. As we like to say, luck favors the prepared. So start thinking about a plan and, like what tends to happen in your neighborhood or in your paddock when it gets really dry? What are some things that tend to happen? What do you need to do? Like using history basically as a guide. And if you're a farmer, and when farmers know the land as well as anyone, thinking about a plan in case it gets really dry in your paddock. There's another thing I should mention. It's not just El Nino. El Nino has a cousin. El Nino has a cousin. And it's in the Indian Ocean. It's the El Nino of the Indian Ocean. So El Nino is in the Pacific Ocean, okay? But if you go between Australia and Africa, that's the Indian Ocean. And there's a thing, I'm going into the weeds here. I'm going to get a bit nerdy on you. There's a thing called the Indian Ocean Dipole, okay? IOD, we call it. And this IOD is in a positive phase. Now, all you have to know is that when we have El Nino and El Nino's cousin working together, what that does, it kind of builds like this imaginary wall to the tropics. So it really limits our ability to get moisture from the north. And that's where a lot of moisture is. I mean, if you go onto the islands, it's humid, it's really sticky. That's moisture, that's humidity, that's water vapor. Well, when we have El Nino and El Nino's cousin, the Indian Ocean Dipole, kind of working together, that really limits our ability to connect to the north. So we're not going to, we don't want to say there's a zero chance of getting big rainfall events. Of course, there's always a chance. Look, it just takes one tropical cyclone to ruin things, you know, or change things. But what we're saying is that that really lowers the odds. Just like, look, you hop in your car, you throw on your seatbelt, you have airbags, you have anti-lock brakes. All those things don't prevent you from getting hurt in a car accident, but what they do is they really limit the odds of you getting hurt in a car accident. So I think, you know, using that analogy, it's not just El Nino. El Nino has a cousin, and that's the Indian Ocean Dipole, and that's really going to increase the odds of having dry conditions, maybe even drought, for the North Island, especially the Upper North Island and the Eastern North Island. So people need to kind of think of a plan, you know, what they're going to do. And if they're going to be out enjoying, you know, the outdoors, camping, things like that, just, you know, being sensible, not lighting fireworks if it's really windy, if it's really dry, because wind, dry conditions, that'll impact things like the fire weather or fire risk for, you know, wildfires and bushfires. So a lot of things to consider, but I think if we're all pretty sensible and just be reasonable, that goes a long way, you know?
Absolutely. Hey, I could probably nerd out with you about El Nino and and its cousin, but we better let it go for now. And I'm sure over the next couple of months we'll see the impacts of these two doing their work. And so hopefully we can be sensible as a nation. But we'll keep in touch with you and see what we might need to prepare for if things take a turn. But hey, thank you so much for having a kōrero with us. And I hope you have an awesome afternoon,
Chris.
Thanks
for having me.
No worries. Ka kite.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye.
There we have it. That was neat. That was Chris Brandolino. He's the principal scientist at NIWA, the National Climate Centre, having a kōrero with us about El Nino, which was actually quite interesting, that kōrero. There's probably not enough information that will probably prepare us for how hot it really is going to be and how much we might be impacted. But as he mentioned, there's some small ways that we can prepare. I know our whānau at the moment, we're sussing our tanks out in Gisborne, and I know that's right across the board as well for a lot of the farmers. So water tanks is as your backstop, especially if you're not connected to the town supply. And then outside of that, let's not light any fires. E hoa mai. I know you probably, if you want to do those lamb tails, you get them done now. But don't freeze them up like my cousins did one time. And then summertime came and started a fire when they weren't allowed. Good story.